It's here and now, and there's news today that Russia is now conducting airstrikes in Syria to support President Bashar al-Assad in his fight against ISIS. This marks an escalation in Russia's role in a conflict that Russia was until recently not playing a major role in. The U.S. has been leading a coalition of countries targeting ISIS in Syria, and Russia's entry into the fray prompted this from President Obama in his speech to the U.N. this week.
The United States is prepared to work with any nation, including Russia and Iran, to resolve the conflict. But we must recognize that there cannot be, after so much bloodshed, so much carnage, a return to the pre-war status quo.
And a return to the pre-war status quo would seem to mean sticking to the strategy of getting rid of President Assad, who was in power before the war began in Syria, something President Obama has called for before, as have the leaders, by the way, of France and the UK. And just to remind you, what started as a peaceful protest against Assad in 2011 turned into a deadly civil war that has already cost more than 200,000 lives. Stephen Kinzer is a former foreign correspondent for The New York Times. He's a columnist at the Boston Globe and a senior fellow at the Watson Institute for International Studies at Brown University. And he's with us here in the studio. Stephen Kinzer, welcome back to Here and Now.
Always good to be here.
And I want to start with the fact that you do not agree with President Obama that Assad needs to go.
It's impossible to imagine that Assad can be the figure now who can bring Syrians back together. He's not going to be the conciliating leader. He doesn't represent Syrians. He doesn't even represent most Syrians. Nonetheless, he speaks for millions of Syrians. He still has a strong base of support. So the idea that before we can start to negotiate, we have to agree that Assad has no role in the future is only a way to prolong the conflict. You cannot resolve any conflict if the spoilers who can potentially upset an agreement are not in the room. We've gotten ourselves into this mindset where we only need to negotiate with our friends. And as a result, we have promoted the continuation of this conflict by refusing to accept all the parties to sit around the table and negotiate.
Well, what could the U.S. have done? Because this goes back to the Arab Spring when the administration really got on the side of the people in every single one of these countries when they wanted to overthrow their leaders, including President Assad.
Well, in the first place, we have been systematically excluding the key players from negotiations. I take you back to a period more than 18 months ago, in January of 2014. Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, called a conference, and he asked Iran to sit at the table, and he wanted some representatives of Assad. The Americans absolutely refused to accept this. We essentially made the decision that it would be worse to sit at a table with Iran and or representatives of Assad than to allow this war to go on. So some responsibility for the horrible tragedy that's afflicting Iran has to be placed on the decision makers who refused to sit with factions in Syria with whom they disagree.
And it's not just the Americans, as we said. The British as well have come out and said that they would like President Assad to go. Here's British Prime Minister David Cameron on CBS yesterday morning, who said teaming up with President Assad is a phony solution to defeating ISIS.
The point I'm making is Assad is one of the recruiting sergeants for ISIL. Because of what he's done to his people, that is one of the reasons why people are flocking to ISIL to fight for ISIL. So that method that some put forward wouldn't work.
How do you respond to that, Stephen Kinzer?
Nobody is proposing teaming up with Assad. That's not what negotiations are about. The key is let's sit down with all the parties. And it's really sinful that we've allowed this horror to unfold because of a political reluctance to talk with one faction or another. We've never figured out what our strategic goal in Syria is. Everybody in that country is our enemy. We have no friends. Assad is our enemy. ISIS is our enemy. The Nusra Front is our enemy. Iran is our enemy. Russia is our enemy. And it's a principle of international relations that if you don't know what your strategic goals are, you are not going to achieve them.
Does the fact, though, that the Assad government has, it appears, used chemical weapons against its own people change the equation? Is it really possible for the U.S. to be talking to somebody who's done that after the U.S. warned against that?
In the first place, I think if you want to solve a crisis, you have to talk with people that you hate. That's just the way the world works. But secondly, I'd be a little careful about jumping to the conclusion that it was Assad who did that. Think of those who were the militant anti-Assad forces. What an incentive it was for them when President Obama said, if there's any chemical usage in Syria, I'm going to go crush Assad. That is the great incentive for Turkey or Saudi Arabia or some other factions to use chemical weapons. So I'd be careful about buying into the official narrative of what happened on the chemical weapons. Nonetheless, that's not to excuse Assad. His tactics have been awful. They've been criminal. Nonetheless, you don't resolve conflicts by only talking to the people who behave well.
We're speaking with Stephen Kinzer, visiting fellow at the Watson Institute for International Studies at Brown University. And do you extend this, what you're saying, to the other conflicts that we've gotten involved in some way or another? Would Libya, for example, be better off with Gaddafi still in power right now? It's, of course, we know it's fallen into chaos, not that it was such a great place beforehand. Would Iraq be better off with Saddam Hussein still in power?
I can tell you that the Libya intervention and the decision not to negotiate in Syria are, in my view, the two biggest foreign policy mistakes that Obama has ever made. Mm. The intervention in Libya has had huge effects, not just turning Libya into a chaotic state and haven for terrorism, but the weapons that were looted from Gaddafi's arsenal have been now spread all over North Africa. Boko Haram, which is kidnapping the girls in Nigeria, is armed by weapons that were liberated from Gaddafi's arsenals after we killed Gaddafi and we blew up that regime. So let me put it this way. I was in Iraq. I covered Iraq when Saddam Hussein was in power. And that was a terror regime. That was about the worst dictatorship I've ever been in. Hmm. However, if you would accept that you don't have the right to free speech, you don't have the right to criticize the government, you can then live normally. You can go to a cafe. You can go to school. You can have a job. Now, there's nothing you can decide in Iraq that will allow you to live a normal life. So it's always a mistake to destroy a political order, no matter how repressive, without knowing what comes next.
Does the U.S., though, lose some sense of moral authority if it stands with a leader like that and against the people who are rebelling against that leader, as was the case, not as much in Iraq, but certainly in Libya and in Syria?
It's not a question of moral authority. It's a question of what the alternative is. So is it better to appear that you're not supporting the side that seems by some narratives to be the freedom fighters, or to go ahead and tolerate the war, the chaos, the mass slaughter that follows? I give you a little comparison here. In 2009, you'll remember the Green Movement protests in Iran. Millions of people went out into the streets to protest against their regime. The thugs and the goons of the regime came out and beat them and repressed them. And the reaction of Iranians, who have learned painful lessons about what revolution brings, was, oh, it didn't work. We tried to change the government. They beat us. We should go home and just imagine that we'll get what we want some other time. It's better to do that than to rip the country apart. Syrians and Egyptians and Libyans did not have that experience that the Iranians had in 1979 of staging a revolution with the hopes that everything would be better and then learning what revolution really brings. So the idea that every time people raise the banner of freedom in the world, it's strategically wise for the United States and good for the people of that country, for the U.S. to stand behind them, sounds good, but look at the results it has brought.
I want to bring you back to today's news about Russian airstrikes in Syria and Russia, it seems, being more in coordination with the Assad government about who they're going after. Let's listen to a piece of tape here. This is John Kerry, the Secretary of State, speaking to CNN this week. He was asked about President Putin's actions there.
If he's going to side with Assad and with Iran and Hezbollah, he's going to have a very serious problem with the Sunni countries in the region. So this is very complicated for him. He needs to work something out, and it's an opportunity, to be honest with you. I think it's an opportunity for us to force this question of how you actually resolve the question of Syria.
It was pointed out, Stephen Kinzer, in the New York Times today, that when Russia says it's going after ISIS targets, as pointed out by the Syrian government, that those may just be targets that the Syrian government calls anybody that's opposed to it a member of ISIS.
Certainly, the entry of Russia into this conflict adds a new complicating factor. But it is the product of the fact that Russia didn't have any other way to get involved. They could not become involved diplomatically because we refused to speak with them. Now, slowly, we're starting to hear a change. That the United States might be ready to talk to Russia and might be ready to talk to Iran. That's about 4 years and 200,000 deaths too late. And although we may be concerned about the long-term implications of increased Russian influence in Syria, what's worse, that or a continuation of the carnage we're seeing in Syria?
Do you see any likelihood that there will be a total change in strategy toward fighting ISIS in Syria now as a result of all that's happened in the last week or so?
Our confusion about our strategy in Syria is so profound, it's hard for me to imagine how we're going to dig our way out of this unless we sit down with all the factions. We have to decide who it is that we want to defeat, and we haven't really figured that out. We want to crush essentially every faction in Syria except for these very small, possibly non-existent so-called moderate fighters. This idea that we're going to go in and train our own forces seems to me to fly in the face of everything we've seen in recent years. So the idea that we're going to be able to create a new force is a fantasy. We need to negotiate with others to find a solution.
Stephen Kinzer, a former foreign correspondent for the New York Times, columnist at the Boston Globe and senior fellow at the Watson Institute for International Studies at Brown. Thank you so much.
Great to be here.